Populism, inequality as a political time bomb, cultural anxieties, artificial intelligence updates, energy matters, and shifting international power and personalities. They were all on the agenda at the annual Crawford Forum held at the ANU earlier this week, which I attended. It's conducted by the university's Crawford School of Public Policy, and it wrestles with some of the thornier, wicked issues of our time. One of the key international guests was a seasoned European bureaucrat, Pascal Lamy, the former head of the WTO, the World Trade Organization, and he demonstrated an enviable grasp of international politics and economics, joining the dots, as it were, in this volatile world. I grabbed him for a short interview at the end of one of his sessions, so you'll hear quite a bit of movement from other delegates as they exit the room. How did he and other Europeans interpret whether Brexit and the Trump election represented a whole new direction in the Western world, or was it an aberration of the Anglophone countries, that is, those who speak English? Pascal Lamy.
Many of us were not expecting what happened with the Brexit vote, nor that Donald Trump would be elected president of the US. And for many of us, these developments, because of their size and because they were not anticipated, raise questions whether the world is moving in a new direction where populist forces would be driving the game, or whether, on the contrary, Brexit vote happened, but negotiations about Brexit are probably going to be terribly difficult. Yes, Donald Trump was elected president of the US, but whether he has really influence reality in tweeting every morning is an open question. So when I look at these rise of populist forces on the European continent, in UK, in US, I think there is a difference as compared to what we could have thought in 2016, which was, oh, it's a new course and we have to get accustomed to that. What we've seen in 2017 is the other way around. I mean, on the continent, successively in Austria, in the Netherlands, in France, populist forces which had won with Brexit or which had won with the election of Trump did not win. The Austrian president is a Green who was opposed to an extreme right candidate. The Dutch elections moved on the side of the government with a huge opposition by the extreme right. And we know that the same pattern took place in France. So my provisional conclusion, while recognizing the jury is still out and these forces will still compete, it's probably that the continent is more populist resilient than UK or US. And the reason behind this is probably that the welfare system is still larger on the continent than it is in UK or, of course, a fortiori in US.
Can that welfare system adapt fast enough, though, to the sorts of challenges that are clearly on offer?
Well, I think that's the big question. What we've seen in recent times is that globalization has been quicker and stronger, and that social systems have not adjusted. And for some of them, have gotten weaker, not least because of the necessity of shrinking expenditure with the 08 crisis in many states in the developed world. So I think we have this question ahead of us. Can we re-embed economic and technological change with social and political change? And this is, in my view, quite a lot about adjusting welfare systems for the future, and welfare in the sense of the purpose of this system being to reduce social and cultural insecurity, which basically they were created in the 19th century.
You did say that the notion that there was an international order driven by states was obsolete, that in fact they were driven by other groups, and that there was a sort of a poly-government as opposed to a Westphalian state-driven process. Does that worry you, or is that a good thing?
I personally think it's a good thing. And the notion that sovereign nation states are losing the monopoly they've had since the 18th century of international governance is a good thing. We probably would not have had the sustainable development goals if it was in the hands of diplomats. We probably would not have had the COP21 agreement in Paris in 2015 if it had been in the hands of diplomats. It worked because other forces, public authorities, but not sovereigns, like cities or regions, stepped in. It worked because civil society organizations stepped in, and most of them are as globalized as General Electric or Danone. Think of WWF, Greenpeace, Oxfam. I mean, these are big multinationals. And a number of businesses stepped in, and notably because in the case of environment, this has a huge bearing on their relationship with their consumers and their shareholders. So this is what I call polygovernance, coalitions of the willing, but which are go beyond sovereign nation states, and that's roughly what happened in the past, for instance, with the fight against HIV/AIDS. I mean, the fight against HIV/AIDS succeeded, in as far as it has succeeded, with the pharma industry, activists, some international organization, some academics, some universities stepping in.
You'd also said something very interesting, that Brexit and Trump, and I suppose to some extent populist developments in the Anglophone countries, had made Europeans feel more European, and that it was having all sorts of impacts on, say, even the thought about a defence policy, which you said if this had been proposed even 10 years ago, you would have been laughed out of court. So that must be a very interesting feeling as a prominent European.
Yeah,
surprising, I mean, by the sound of it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you're right. It's a bit of a paradox that populist-generated development create a sort of anti-populist reaction, because continental public opinions see that Brexit is a mess, and I don't think they take Donald Trump very seriously. So this creates a sort of message that, you know, we'd better rely a bit more on ourselves. I think on the Brexit negotiation, the Europeans are much more united a year after the vote than one would have thought in this negotiating position. And I think what's happening on defense and security within the European Union is a direct consequence of the feeling that we'd better not have all our eggs in NATO, because NATO still is US-driven, and, you know, US-driving may not be that safe.
I just have to ask you, too, about the way you think about politics and economics. And you had some interesting thoughts. People talk about the Thucydides trap, the rising power, and so on and so forth. But you suggest that the Chinese, in fact, behave very rationally on the world stage, and they have done so for about 50 years now. China's economics and politics overlap, you suggested, in ways that they don't necessarily in the policy of Donald Trump or Vladimir Putin.
It's, of course, a bit of a simplification, but if we accept that the future of the world will be driven within this interaction between geopolitics and geoeconomics, we have a US where the politics are not in line with the economics of the US. We have a Russia where politics are not in line with the economics of Russia. And we have a China where economics and politics are in line with one another. Now, of course, not a democratic system, although there's quite a high level of legitimization of the party that's taking place within China. And I think if you look at Europe, that's what's probably going to happen. I mean, Europe was reasonably successful in geoeconomic integration. So far, it wasn't that successful in geopolitical integration. And I think the years to come will probably see Europe moving more like China than US or Russia.
In governance, question mark?
Yeah, but that's, you know, it matters, of course. But, I mean, if you look at Europe, I mean, the real issue is not about institutions or processes. The issue is whether public opinions in Europe are back to the notion, which they've been doubting for the last 10 years or so, that they do better together than alone. And, of course, in this issue, Brexit is a big test case. We will know 10 years ahead from now whether UK does better alone than with the other Europeans. I doubt it's the case, but, you know, that's what they pretend they should do.
Finally, well, so you must be watching your sort of semi-protégé, it's not quite right to call him that, but as you say, he was a younger man, Emmanuel Macron, in your arena. I mean, he really, my goodness, he's jumped out of the box in an extraordinary way. What is your best hope and your worst fear about the Macron reign?
My best hope is that he and the majority he now has in the parliament use this new force they have created to bring the necessary changes in the French social and economic system. Not that it needs a revolution, but it needs adaptations, which have been long overdue. Basically, I mean, France for the last 40 years has not adjusted to a changing world as rapidly as its peers. And there is an opportunity to do that. It's unexpected, probably as unexpected as Brexit or as the election of Trump, although the reason why it happened is exactly the opposite. It happened on a sort of centrist right and left political mantra, which is totally the opposite of the populist movement that drove to Brexit or to the election of Trump. So I think there is a big opportunity. We will see in the months and years to come whether Emmanuel Macron and his government exploit this potential. But I think the potential definitively is here. And it's probably the best occasion France has had for the last 40 years to reconcile itself with a rapidly changing and globalizing world.
Well, Pascal Lamy, thank you very much indeed for joining us. My pleasure. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Pascal Lamy, a prominent European bureaucrat, the former head of the WTO, talking to me there at the ANU's Crawford School.